Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
So page 23. The Lord continued. The Emperor Swayambhuva Manu, the son of Lord Brahma, who is well known for his righteous acts, has his seat in Brahmavarta and rules over the earth with its seven oceans. The day after tomorrow, O Brahmana, that celebrated emperor, who is expert in religious activities, will come here with his queen, Satarupa, wishing to see you. He has a grown-up daughter whose eyes are black. She is ready for marriage, and she has good character and all good qualities. She is also searching for a good husband. My dear sir, her parents will come to see you, who are exactly suitable for her, just to deliver their daughter as your wife. 25 to 27. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 27. The selection of a good husband for a good girl was always entrusted to the parents. Here he has clearly stated that Manu and his wife were coming to see Kardama Muni to offer their daughter because the daughter was well qualified and the parents were searching out a similarly qualified man. This is the duty of parents. Girls are never thrown into the public street to search out their husband. For when girls are grown up and are searching after a boy, they forget to consider whether the boy they select is actually suitable for them. Out of the urge for sex desire, a girl may accept anyone. But if the husband is chosen by the parents, they can consider who is to be selected and who is not. According to the Vedic system, therefore, a girl is given over to a suitable boy by the parents. She is never allowed to select her own husband independently. Yeah, so you have two things here. One is the proper selection, so that means then the parents themselves must be trained. So that's always the other side of these points that are made. You know, like it'll say, the wife talks sweetly. That's because the husband deals sweetly. Right? Does that make sense? It means reciprocation means it always happens what is, the response is always what is offered. Does that make sense? If the husband's supportive, the wife will be supportive. If he's nasty, she'll be nasty. So when you're saying the wife should be sweet speech, nice, have a service attitude, what does that mean? He's always dealing nicely and he always has a service attitude. Right? Because if the idea is a woman follows the man, that means what the man wants her to do, he has to be doing. Right? Does that make sense? It's just logic. Because we're dealing in an area where no one might say, well, why isn't it more direct? Why isn't it more obvious? But the whole thing is the whole arrangement is based on not being obvious. Right? Does that make sense? That's like dealing with water and then complaining that you get wet. Does that make sense? The feminine nature means contrary, elusive, and shy. So that means the system is also presented in that mood, that framework. So if someone doesn't like it, then the Vedic system has a perfect solution. It's called brahmachari. Like that. Does that make sense? Yes.
Does it mean that the lady is always responsive? So she always does the second step, not the first one?
She may do the first one just to start something, but it won't be continued.
In established relationship.
But what's it based on? If it's established, then what's it based on? It's based on what you know you can do. You understand? So in other words, the woman is taking a very leading role. That's because she has the confidence that she can. Right? So how does she have the confidence unless there's that support? Does that make sense? So he has that support, means he's confident in the relationship, therefore she's confident. Does that make sense? So the whole thing is it takes on so many flavors because this is where variety is happening. Like make we reread about Tapaloka. Was there any variety there? There were basically two, sitting together talking philosophy or disappearing, going back to their ashrams and meditating. There didn't seem to be a third option. Right? It's not that they had a pleasant walk from where they talked and back to their ashram. They just disappeared because they're yogis.
So there are no cafes in the...
No, there's nothing there. And therefore we notice that there is no women. Right? Because there's no variety. So it's a purely masculine environment because it's just situated basically in Sat. Right? So only when there's Chit and Ananda, then you know, add that in, then you have the feminine nature. Does that make sense? So the whole thing is based on this, and that's what's to be understood. It's not a ritual. Oh, the parents have to pick, but the parents have to know what they're doing. Right? Because all the 12, where? Select good husband, good girl. How is she a good girl? The parents are you know, rat bags, and how would she be a great girl?
Just because we want her.
Yeah, just because you want her to be. You understand? So these are the underlying things that have to be understood. You know? It says good, suitable, similarly qualified. Right? These are the terms that are used. So that means then that there's knowledge. But the problem is in the modern scenario, it's just if I feel like it, it'll happen. We're taking on the satya sankalpa aspect of Krishna. You know, because I want it, it will happen. But unfortunately it doesn't. Then we get grumpy. You know. Yes?
Well, actually, can we say that as a principle, feminine always reflects the masculine?
Always. Always. Like that. Means if there's something that the feminine is interested in, she may throw it out just to spark something. And then once it's sparked, she'll sit back. You know what I'm saying? It's just like that one. Did you ever see that? I used to show it before, I'm not sure. It was a documentary called Itarshapan.
What?
Itarshapan. It's some place in Africa. Where you have this huge, like, valley, flat as anything. And it's dry totally, but at some time of the year it rains and really heavy. So it turns into this lush paradise and it's just teeming with animals and everything. And then at some point, I guess summer comes along, it dries up and goes back to just, you know, kind of like almost like desert again. So in that it had, because of all the water and all the animals, and actually you have all the lions, right? And they, you know, and they're popular places, you know, like any, you know, buddy to sit down next to the watering hole, right? You know, you hang out at the water cooler or, you know, the place like that. So they hang out at the watering hole, right? So there were these two male elephants. Lions. I mean, really male lions. Huge, big manes, you know, just sitting there, you know, doing the,
chilling out.
The mud potato thing, you know. You know, just sitting there. And then this really, I don't know what word it'd be, but like really like slinky female lion went by, you know, doing all the moves, you know, not holding anything tight. You know, everything's loose, you know, so when they move like this. She walked by. The guys are just sitting there staring like this, you know, not at her, just at the water, you know, because nothing to do, right? You know, I guess, you know, like that. She walks right by them, all the way by. And then, having walked all the way by and giving full opportunity for them to notice, then she turns around, walks back, walks straight up to the biggest of the two, And just when he's right there, then he turns and looks. Then she whacks him in the face. You know, he's all, wow, like this. And then she walks off again. Right? So now she's, you know. Yeah, giving him the opportunity. Now you can look, you know, seeing that you didn't notice before. Is that like that? So that's the thing, is that the feminine aggressive element is there just for flavor, to show what is of interest or to spark where there is no interest. In other words, if interest is there but not variety, then there'll be that aspect to add in other elements. Or there is no, you know, there's too much couch potato in this, so then something will be stunted, you know. You know how you say? Like Surabhi Maharaj was explaining in Vrindavan when they built the temple. You know, doing the foundation, so you have to dig the mud out. So like here they put it on people's head and they carry it out. There they put it on those donkeys.
Right.
But in the middle of winter, it's so cold, the donkeys won't move. You can come, you can push them, you can yell, you can hit them with a stick. They won't move. The only way you'll get them to move is you build a fire under them. Literally, you start a fire and then it's kind of like, oh, okay. Then they start. But once they move, then you can keep them going. You know, so. Like that. So therefore, when the masculine element takes on that quality, then, you know, there's words, there's sticks, there's fire. You know, the masculine will take, oh, they don't like. But otherwise, the point is, if they don't like, why would they waste their time? Right? Woman's not stupid. She doesn't waste. She won't even give a look of dissatisfaction to a guy that's not worth giving the look to. You know, they're not stupid, right? You know what I'm saying? It means it's a, how you say it? It's part of the conspiracy. You present that you're stupid just so that the men will feel, you know, inspired enough. Right? Is that?
Yeah.
So it's a whole science. It's not rules here. Devotees say, oh no, why is the girl doing this and that? Because it says on her own, she is never allowed to select her own husband independently. So what would that imply? It means she can select her husband, but not independent of the parents. And even if she selects, it's the parents that should do the runner-up. You know, it means who wants to go up to somebody and be insulted, right? So you send the parents in there, let them get insulted. You know, it's such a superior system. It's so properly geared to the feminine mentality, but you have to know that that's what you're dealing with. Well, nowadays is that these things are applied, but from the masculine mentality. So it's just like a machine. You know, this tool goes in this box, and this thing hangs on the wall here on that nail, and you know, like that. So it's not by the mentality. So the mentality, then it makes it work, as we'll see as he goes through here. Parents are arranging, but there are so many details that are there. Does that make sense? So that the girl is interested in the boy, that's what you want, but she doesn't have to go up to the boy to ask, right? If that's there, that means there is no parents to take care. You know, there may be parents, but it doesn't mean that they're really parents. You know? Otherwise, it doesn't give a good result. So that means that they're not well trained. You know, unless, of course, that's the way the community works. I mean, I heard in one place up in the Himalayas, you know, about that, where the girl knocks, she goes up to the house of the boy, she knocks on the door, and then, you know, like that, and either the boy comes to the door, someone else, and then they send the boy to the door, and then she says something, whatever she says, and then she runs. And if he can catch her before she gets back to her house, then they get married. And if not, he wasn't qualified. You know?
Well, I'm not interested.
He is running. He's not interested. He'd turn around and go back inside. But the point is if he's running, he can't catch her, then, you know, what's the point? What's the use? You know? So you may have some interesting elements, but it's all within the context of that's how it works in that society. You know, so there is control, there is this and that. Because, you know, does that make some sense?
Yes.
Because everybody knows everybody in that village. It's not like, you know, what are you doing here, you know? So in other words, she's probably already arranged with her parents that that's okay, yes. You know, and that, and you know, it's been worked out. But now it's between the two of them. It would be tough if she was the next door neighbor, right? She lives on the other side of town. I guess maybe that's why the Shastra doesn't recommend marrying the neighbor. Yes.
Right. Can you come from that? I've heard, I want to know if it's proper also, that when the parents fail to make the arrangement, then it becomes the duty of the girl to...
It's not the duty of the girl. It means if when she comes a marriageable age and 3 years has passed and the parents haven't made any arrangement, then she can make her own. It still doesn't mean she goes out on the street. She does it through her friends. Instead of telling the parents they manage it, now she tells the friends or whoever else, you know, is confidential and manages it. But she still never goes out on the street.
So she has to find alternative authorities?
No. It just means it's just a matter of now she just does it herself. You know what I'm saying? In other words, she comes a marriageable age and her marriage hasn't been arranged, then the parents forfeit the right to actually arrange the marriage. They can't complain about who she chooses. You know, she's still discussing with them and that's nice, that's good. But the point is it's her arrangement now. You know what I'm saying? So it's not just, you know, how you say, etched in stone. It's that's the natural thing if the parents are doing their natural duty. I mean, in the normal society, they've already started working things out when they're small. You know, they have friends, they see the other families, they appreciate how they do. And so, you know, you have ideas already. And then as the time goes, then it gets more and more, details are arranged.
So, let's say in our modern context in ISKCON, especially people from the West.
But why do you use modern and ISKCON? Because modern means non-Vedic, ISKCON means Vedic.
Yeah, or let's say how the modern has entered our ISKCON. We're coming from the West, so We may be
we. What does that mean,
parents?
West? According to the Vedic, is Burma is West.
Extreme West.
So as far as, you know, they're concerned, you're pretty far east.
Okay.
So you would be an Western Oriental gentleman. According to them.
That's a new perspective.
Yes.
That's a much Yavanic kind of culture, you know. So we join ISKCON. We may be trying to be Vedic, but our parents are definitely not.
No, but it doesn't matter. Then you do the best you can. What's the principle?
Well, the principle is that it should be done by intelligence and not the mind.
Yeah, so that means it has to work out. It means you have to know, whoever's arranging it should know what they're doing. So the parents should be the ones who know what they're doing. If they don't, then the girl and her friends have to know. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, whoever's taking that responsibility has to know what they're doing. That's the principle.
So the next best thing besides the parents is just anyone she knows well who's qualified.
Yeah, yeah. In other words, if their first generation and parents aren't exactly involved in these things, then it has to be that. But if you have parents where, you know, they're devotees and then they have kids, then they should do. Yes?
What's marriageable age, Ron?
Marriageable age, it depends on your perspective. You know, that's a funny thing. In the West, girls aren't marriageable age until they're like, you know, 16, 18. Though they are buying condoms when they're 12. You know what I'm saying? Because she knows the boys too spaced out to buy them. You know what I'm saying? So it's a pretty weird society. So, you know.
It's like early marriage is from the bond, but having sex in school is cool.
Yeah, like that. So it's just everything's weird. So it just means whenever, you know, how you say? Ideally before implosion. Does that make sense? But anything, just even in the modern context, 16 and above, it just depends on the girl. Those who are generally tend to be more emotional, then they want to marry early. Those who will be a little more intellectual, they'll marry later. Like that. So it's very individual. But most places in the world, from 16, you can legally get married. Some places even 15. You know, like I think like Texas or something. It's, you know, can be earlier. You know, and then of course there's Mexico. Is that, you know, so but the point is from 12 that the interest is there. That's why the Vedic system was arranged from there, because then the intensity within it is very mild. So the boy's not that well mature, but at the same time the girl is not that strong, you know, in the way of being how you say it? Yeah, we'll leave it at that. Okay? So any mistakes he makes and her, it works out quite easily. And by the time they get to the age where they tend to be a little heavier, the boy has been trained. But otherwise, they wait till later, the girl's heavier, but the boy's still not trained. So now you have a girl who expects more from a boy, and a boy that actually may be less sensitive than he would have been earlier. You know, so it's a mess, but whatever. So there's a science. You know the science, then it works. But at the same time, you see, in the Vedic, boys would get married later, but their training was such that if it's always about menial service and lack of ownership and that, then you're just going from that into this other thing. You're performing the duties in the ashram, and you're performing the duties at home. And, you know, someone else is controlling the ashram, so someone else controls the home. It works. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, when they grow up as bachelors, then it's a problem. You know, they don't mind the empty pizza boxes on the coffee table. Somehow or another, strangely enough, girls do. You know, and to him it's, well, this is the way I am. You know, but, you know, you adjust anything. Right? You get something, you adjust it the way you like it. You know, and then somebody gets upset that they're being adjusted. You know, it's like, so... That's the whole thing. If the training is there, then these things of ages and that aren't a problem. It can work earlier, later, anytime. It'll work. So it's not about the earlier will make it work better, the later will make it work better. It's with training that will make it work better. Without training, then it'll be very difficult. You know, unless the individuals are very dutiful, but that means training. You know. So ultimately, it doesn't really matter. It's just that if you start earlier, you finish earlier. Does that make sense? You know, you have the enthusiasm to... Yeah, you know. Does that make sense? You know, an older adult would really like to sleep at night. But a teenager doesn't really mind staying up all night for a good movie or some gossip, or in this case, a baby. You know what I'm saying? It's not a problem for them. And so they adjust with it. So that's the whole thing, is that... Yeah. So unless training is there, then the problem is anybody who is interested may be accepted. But because the drive is a sex urge, then that means the who we've attracted has the same principle. And so the girl expects more. The boy's not. So it won't work. Is that what I said? So that's why the street option is never considered good. Devotees like to use it, but if you check, what's the success rate? How well is it working for them? Probably not any better than it is for the karmis. You know what I'm saying? If I have a car with a flat tire and I drive it, I'm a karmi. I drive it, it's a problem. But now, there's this idea, if I'm a devotee, there'll be no problem. It's still a flat tire, still has a problem. Does that make sense? So it's not working out any better. There's a method. You use it, it works. You don't understand it, say that. Don't say it doesn't work. Yes.
It seems, according to the Bhagavatam, that it is better if it is a girl side to select the husband.
Yes, because then the girl is interested in the boy. Does that make sense? Because it's generally the girl who breaks the arrangement. Right? I think it's something like 90% of divorces are filed by the women. like that. So if she's selected, that means she's most into it. There you have the best opportunity for it to last. Does that make sense? It means the boy goes after the girl. It's interesting to the girl just for interest's sake, but it doesn't necessarily mean that there's a commitment. You know what I'm saying? It can work that way because it is one of the four authorized marriages. You know? So the Arsha means that the boy's family has approached the girl's family. Like that. So it works. So there's that respect, mutual respect between the families. It can work. Like that. The best is when the girl's side of the family makes the arrangement. Or even if not the parents are making the arrangement, the girl makes the arrangement. So those three are considered better than if the boy. But all those are better than, you know, the modern Gandharva, just, oh, they like, and you know, that kind of jazz. Does that make sense? So the whole point is if one's trained, one can follow duties. Because that's what will hold it together. Now, if on top of that you have love, that mutual attraction, then it makes it even easier. But if you don't, then by properly performing the duties and cooperating together, that affection and attachment will develop. You know, if you work with something you really like, you get attached to it. You know, your favorite pot or your favorite shoes or, you know, like that. This because it's not because when you saw it, it was just love at first sight with a pot. You know, it's that this pot really is good. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. So if the relationship, a bad example. Okay. Thought I should have said something else. Purse. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, the best is that both are trained and both have natural attraction. If not, then both are trained and then by working together, that attraction will develop. Is that? You sure you want to know and then? means all of them are based on having the natural qualities. Means they have training. The third one is you think of someone that you would rather be married to and superimpose that onto who you are married to. But you're still dutiful and follow everything.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yeah. So.
I know some older people die now. They were in the third category.
Yeah. Yeah, but it works. The point is it works. You know, it's in other words, somebody ideals the qualities you have, and you can see some of those aspects within the person that you're married to. So therefore, it'll work. The point is to appreciate the qualities and to cooperate together. But even from the third, it can move to the second. That's generally what will happen if it's functioning, because you're starting from the, you know, in other words, you're starting from positive, you're starting from neutral, or you're starting from, you know, there's not something there, but it would be, it's a good arrangement, though basically there may not be as much of the emotional element. But with association, it develops. Right? Because the idea is that if there's that cooperation, then things will go peacefully in the home, then the quality of the children will be good. So the point is good parents produce good children. Right? Is that the idea? Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that if the parents are spoiled, the children are spoiled. But there are a lot of children or devotees whose parents are not devotees, and they're becoming...
So that's another thing. If parents aren't devotees, then you don't really worry about it because we don't necessarily spend much time with them. Right? Does that make sense? Because by the Western path, you don't have to. Once you turn legal age, you can move out, and they can't say boo. You know, because that's their society. You know what I'm saying?
But it's still the first 16 or 18 years.
Yeah.
Crucial.
Yeah. But what can you do? That's what you have.
Yeah.
But here we're talking about more for those within the society and their children. You know, or for those who are from first generation, so then those who are, how you say, in a position to arrange marriages, then they should know what they're doing. Does that make sense? Because it's about the individuals. It's not a management consideration. Does that make sense? It's about the individuals, how that'll work. Because if that's there, the social fabric will be strong. Does that make sense? Yeah? It means you have girls in your temple, they get married, they go to another temple. But you have boys. If someone else has girls, they'll come to your temple. So you don't lose. You know, the idea is that keep the girls at our temple, but there's no one qualified. Then the problem is then it's going to be, you're going to get more trouble from a bad marriage than you will from losing the girl. You know what I'm saying? I went to what's it was in Calcutta. The president there. Somebody came there and this and that because he was very strict about who was in the temple because it was very small, so they wouldn't allow many people in there. And it had very high standards, super clean, super fabulous deity worship, you know, everything, fabulous prasad, everything. So he didn't want anything to not run nicely. So if someone came there, they ask him what they're doing, you know. And if you could understand from the conversation that they ended up there and they don't have money, he would give them money to go wherever they're going. Like, so I saw once he gave money, they went to Mayapur. Then after some months, they came back to Calcutta, he gave them money to go to Vrindavan or Bombay. So I asked him, why are you giving money? He said, I'm giving him 100 rupees to go to Bombay. He says, I only lose 100 rupees. If the guy stays, then so much difficulty he'll create because there's no place for him, there's no this and that, so it's actually cheaper to pay. You know, it was a purely business consideration. But he had a fabulous temple. Is that something? Yeah. So that's the thing, is bad arrangements are more expensive, both economically, socially, emotionally, devotionally, all these things. You understand? So people, the reason that the modern system is used because there's lack of qualification, lack of knowledge, and lack of understanding what to do. So it's easier to just let it happen. Does that make sense? So it's not that the West is a system. It's just they let it happen. And it doesn't necessarily work out, so they're not in control. Right? So because they don't accept authority, they can't be authority. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Marge, we've seen in a devoted family, parents, they are trained, and the girl is trained, and somehow she likes the boy, but parents, they say no. And then should she just, you know, follow them, or how?
Well, it should be a discussion why. Because it can't be just we said so. That's a bit, that's not on the, it doesn't have the intellectual application that the Vedic culture provides. You know what I'm saying? We have so much knowledge, it's based so much on knowledge, so if they can't explain why, because if they actually have a reason why, and it's explained, the girl will understand and everything's fine. If they don't have a reason why, then they should actually consider why is it. You know, in other words, if you just don't like the guy, but why not? What don't you like? You know? Oh, he didn't respect me when he first came. He didn't know that you were a prospective father-in-law. You know, you just bumped into him and he wasn't like bowing down and rolling on the ground. So, you know, stuff like that. You know, so these kind of things, then the parents have to actually consider themselves. So the whole point is everybody develops. As we said, to be authority, you have to be surrendered to authority. The reason this can't work is because many don't actually, they have authority issues. So they can't surrender to authority, and therefore they can't actually be authority. So their juniors, though they may follow, don't actually appreciate it. And therefore then the whole thing breaks down. So that's why the parampara element is there. Is that if you don't accept authority, you in no way, shape, or form are actually in a position to be an authority. But it's popular. That's along with what we're saying here. The the modern marriage methods, it's because of this principle of authority issues. If there's the element of acceptance of authority, then generally this system works very easy. Because you can say, Western world, we don't do that, this is archaic. It is archaic amongst the common person. But amongst the more higher in the social strata, they use this, they always use this. They've always used it. They've never not used it and never thought that it shouldn't be used. Like that. You know, but of course, it's done a lot with the discussion with the girl and this and that. But it's always been used. You know, yes.
So let's say arguments are there and it's a good argument and she should marry, but still she's in love, her heart is broken and this and that.
The element is there should be a close enough, means in other words, there should be a discussion about these things at an earlier age. How did the parents let it go to the point where she's already fallen for somebody and it wasn't discussed? Because the point is, and what if the parents, okay, good arguments, is it based on the charts aren't good or some other things like that? You know? So if it's based on that, why wasn't that done before? Why weren't the parents active and looking at these things? Because the point is, you're standing in the temple room, you can understand who your daughter's interested in. You know? And if you're standing there, oh, my little girl and all this and that, you know, I mean, hey, you know, 30 is not a little girl anymore. You know? You know, it's like that. He's. So the point is, are you looking? So they're thinking, oh, she's too young. Who said? You know? Who said? So things should be starting to be arranged. So they have to be sensitive. They can't be, oh, we're surprised. How did this happen? Yeah, that's the point. How did it happen? How are you so unqualified? Your girl's falling in love with somebody and you don't know about it. That means, what kind of parents are you? Oh, what do you expect? What do you, oh, we don't know. It's like, yes, yeah, so then. So now accept. You don't know, now try to work with it. She wants to get married. Now be dynamic. Okay, this is the word. Check the charts. If it's not good, okay, find somebody who the chart is good. And then present, this is better. But just to sit back again and just let it happen again. Now she's got to unlove this guy and then fall in love with someone else that they approve. That's not parenting. That's just sitting by and watching. You know, wanting to step in to be authority but not take any responsibility. So these things aren't pleasant at all, but, you know, we're dealing with people's lives here. We're not talking about, you know, daddy's relationship with his little girl or mommy's control over the girl because she can't control anything else, you know. We're talking about people's lives here. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that this idea that my life can spill over on everybody else's and that's my right, it's not actually there. Others accommodate it, and that's their good qualities. But no one can say that they have the right. You know what I'm saying? And these kind of things. So that's the thing. Generally in the Western, it's all about the parents. The kids actually don't have a say in it. You know, the parents are fighting over custody of the kid. What about the kid? Who would they rather be with? How would they like it to work out? That's not even a question. Oh, they don't know. As if the parents know? If the parents are fighting over the kid, means they don't know what a parent is. Right? The kids should never see fighting. That's just the way it works. Is that? Yeah. So that's the whole problem is that the Western, because of the, you know, whatever situations may be there, you know, you put in a few great wars and other things like that, you lose a lot of the men folk, and, you know, women kind of got to step in and do things, you know. But at the same time is that the men, being untrained, cannot create the environment in which the women can prosper. And because of that, then these things aren't in place. So it's just a matter of this training, then these things will be there. But generally when these things, we'll catch just the rule itself. We won't actually catch the feminine masculine principles. That's what's at work. You understand that. This is the ideal form of it. But if you don't have the ideal, then you'll use whatever next best, but you'll get the principles to function. But nowadays it's that, okay, these are the fanatic rules, and then we have the practical, you know. No, but neither of those, they both miss the point. You know what I'm saying? That's the Niyamagraha is the same principle. So whether you're a smart or a liberal, you've both missed the points, right? Both have missed. So then it's a matter of they understand this, what is actually at work. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like arguing over the pot. It's a matter of what works. Like that. That's the thing. And if that's accepted, then yes, people don't necessarily know what they're doing, but at least there's a humble environment in which it could develop. Because when you know, you can't say it's a glorious thing that in 40 years or 50 years no one's figured out how to make this work. No one can say this is glorious. Does that make sense? It's not an excuse. Oh, we don't know. How long have we not known? Prabhupada's been talking about it since the devotee joined. But we don't catch it because of, you know, lack of culture. You know, it's just like someone who's trained in art can tell what a good painting is. You know, like that. So it's the same way. Is that if we are from a background that has some culture, then condition-wise we would appreciate it. If not, then, you know, over the generations and because of the practice of Krishna consciousness, then that culture will come. You know, and better late than never. You know? So in other words, even though it's been so many years, it's not too late. You know, you just start and then you do the best you can. And then if it wasn't an ideal arrangement, then you give support so that it works as best as it can. You know? And that, you know, so that means then there's commitment, there's responsibility, means you actually emotionally have to get involved in people's lives, which means we have to give up our impersonalism and voidism. So really the tough part is that we're attached to impersonalism and voidism, and that's why underlying there's a culture that's like that. So the Western culture is based on voidism and impersonalism. Though they claim to be monotheistic, but actually the basis is they're impersonal and voids. Like that. So they don't have. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But you find individuals or communities where this is much stronger. They have a stronger relationship here, they're stronger, and they're still functioning like that today. You know? But ultimately, then you have to make it work. You know, because love is that has that aspect of attachment. But still, even you're attached, you have to know what you're doing. Just like I want to eat, I'm attached to eating, but if I don't know cooking, it doesn't work out very good. You know? Yeah, right. Therefore, the noodle's in the cup, right? So I can be attached and it works as long as I don't burn my fingers boiling the water, pouring it into the cup. You know? It's dangerous. Yeah, yeah. Yes. Expectations. What does that mean, expectations? Expectations of the couple. And what does expectation mean? What do they mean by expectations?
It means what they want from that relationship and practical things like where to live, you know,
which
spiritual standards.
Okay, let's say this. I want to deep fry something. What pot do I use? Yeah, okay. Let's say I want to sauté something. What pot do I use?
Pan.
Right? Let's say I want to boil something. What pot do I use?
A deep pot.
You understand? Now, that's the principle, the main point. Then the secondary is how well you deal with it, because there is an art to the frying and the sautéing and the boiling. So what you're talking about is the boiling, the sautéing, and the frying. But, you know, you try to boil your pasta in a frying pan. You know what I'm saying? So you have expectations, right? You want boiled pasta. But what are you working with? So that's what the charts tell you. The charts, see, the problem is they say if the chart's good, everything's fine. No, the chart just tells you what you have. And then the training, as mentioned there, good character, what was the other one? Probably mentioned two, which generally we would take it as one thing. Good character and good qualities. Right? So the good quality. Well, the qualities is what you're working with, and the character is how you use it. You know, let's say good quality, she's rich. Good character is she knows how to, you know, properly use, manage the money. You understand? So there's finer. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? So the charts are there so you know that there is a basic compatibility between the conditioning. Now, what they expect from their conditioning and how they want to go about it and which aspects are more important, that's the next thing you check. Does that make sense? But now, for let's say it's about, what do you call it? What the term you used? It's about expectations. How are they going to, how is these expectations going to be shared? How is he going to know what she wants if she knows what he wants? Okay, so that means if they don't have a open communication, natural communication between them, then it won't work. So then again, that goes back to the chart. So saying it's about their expectations, but unless the other person knows what you expect and accepts that. Okay, the guy knows what she, or they, you know, she tells him, he knows, but he doesn't care. No? You understand? So that's why the charts are important.
And compatible nature would mean compatible expectations.
Yeah. Because compatible means it works together, doesn't mean it's the same. Does that make sense? You have a frying pan and you have a spatula. They're not the same. They're compatible. Or fire and a pot. They're compatible. Right? Or a stove and fire. They're compatible. Does that make sense? So that's what you're looking for. No, but that's why you have the standard stuff that you're looking at. So have them explain it, because all it is there to them what's more important or this or that. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is you're supposed to be the intelligent one, right? And then note what they're saying and note what the other person's saying, and then put it all together. They're not contradictory because they're dealing with the same thing. It's just values. Like so one astrologer, he looked at some brahmachari's palm. He looked at it and says, you're not going to get married. I mean, no, it means even if you, if you got married, it wouldn't last very long, right? Or maybe a month. So because, you know, in your, you know, for the family line, get married, have a child, and then, you know, the marriage will break up, but the family line will go on. That was his advice. But that's not an astrologer's advice. That's not his position. That's his opinion. Does that make sense? You know, because for him, family line going on was most important. But if you consider, no, children being raised in proper culture and that, then it's not a good arrangement. So you have to distinguish what's their opinion and what are facts. Does that make sense? So it's not a problem. Digesting lunch is a problem. But every day you happily take on that problem. You understand? So that's the thing, is these are part of family life. They're not problems. If they're a problem, then you don't make the effort. No, this is what has to be done. You know what I'm saying? If you're in a bad neighborhood, is it a problem to lock your door? Yeah. So that's the whole thing. If you know how these things work, then there's not a problem. We only see it as a problem like, well, why doesn't it just happen? You understand? We have to remember, in the beast was a nobleman. You understand? He did have a palace, he had grounds, he had money, he was fabulously powerful and wealthy. But by a curse, he ended up as something strange. Right? So they didn't start with something bad. Right? Or the blacksmith, okay? He's there and the girl falls in love with the blacksmith, like that. But we do see that he actually was the son of some nobleman who somehow or another, due to politics, got pushed to the side, either gotten rid of or hidden. And therefore, that's why when the time comes along for the Crusades, he goes out there and wins the whole thing. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is if the character is not there, it doesn't happen. You know what I'm saying? Hollywood, it happens. You know what I'm saying? It's interesting. You have these, you know, a show where the guy makes a phone call. Within 30 seconds, they know exactly where he is and this and that. And then guys drop out of the ceiling and, you know, the place is nuked, right? But in another one, you know, the whole movie goes by, days go by, and they can't figure out where the person is, though they're right in the same city and they know they're in the city. How is that? You understand? So therefore, whatever will sell is what they do. And what sells is what we want to believe. I'm unqualified, but simply because I feel like it, everything works out perfectly. Right? You know, you have the... You're just some guy, you know, office guy, and then he takes on the aliens and saves the world, right? He can't even get his pencil sharpened without breaking it, but he takes on the aliens. You understand? So that's the difficulty, is that the quote-unquote Western society, you know, read Hollywood, that knows what sells. And then that's how they write things, and people want to believe it, therefore they spend their money. And then it just confirms that, oh yes, everything. You understand? Now inherently that comes because the soul identifies as eternal and happy. So if there's any feeling of happiness, there's the idea it will last eternally. It does in the spiritual world, because what you're dealing with is eternal. But when you're dealing in the material world with material bodies that are temporary, then all these, and the mind that's temporary, then all these things are lost. So the underlying principle that they want it to work is based on the nature of the soul. But if we don't recognize that, that's called illusion. So the Western culture, though it's driven by the need of the soul, they're in total illusion, because they don't connect that their needs are connected to the soul. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, and the fun part is that the modes of nature, then it doesn't matter if one's a devotee or not. They still act. Mode of ignorance still acts, you know, creates illusion whether you're a devotee or not a devotee. So if we accept what the Guru Sadhu and Shastra says, we make that endeavor, then Krishna being pleased, that illusion moves back. But if we doubt, then the illusion will remain. So they're saying, oh, it doesn't work. That's because we don't want it to work. Does that make sense? Yeah, so then that's the whole thing. Our conditioning gets in the way of our spiritual development. So spiritual will let go a little bit more, but social, that we're really attached to. Because that is our conditioning. The spiritual is the soul. The conditioning is therefore our false identity. So we like it to go on in that way.
So that would be the fourth offense? Blessing the Vedic future or minimizing the Vedic future?
That's there. But I'm saying is that we're not talking about seriously. It means you have individuals who it is seriously. Like somebody once said, you know, somebody said, no, but Prabhupada said this about how you live in your house. And so I'm the founder Acharya in my house. Okay, you know, great. You know, strike that guy off your list, right? You know, his whole point, I'm the king of my castle, I do whatever I want. You know, when I come to the temple, okay, then I follow the rules. Yeah, and so he'll get benefit from his chanting and topa programs, but he'll get zero benefit in his house. So if he's not careful, if he puts a lot of effort into his sadhana, they'll get purified and the other one will follow. But if he's not, then the other one will be victorious. And therefore, one will take birth in a, you know, nice family. Not devotional, but just a nice family. You know what I'm saying? So that would mean that there's going to be a good preaching field like in Vermont and New Hampshire and stuff. Yes?
Just to come back on the analogy of boiling pasta in a frying pan.
Boiling pasta in a frying pan, yes.
So if you have two couples, one has a good charge, one has a bad charge, and they both want to boil the pasta, one will have a deep pan and the other one has a frying pan, but
right,
it can still be successful. It's just
one couple
will be easier.
It'll be easier. That's the whole point. So then what does that come down to? It comes down to the commitment, therefore the character and the qualities. So the chart only points out the compatibility that's there, but if the character and qualities aren't there, then the effort won't be made. So it's not about the expectation. The expectations are, you know, means what are the standards? So if you have standards, you marry someone with standards. You don't have standards, you marry someone without standards. Or if you're smart, you marry someone with standards and try to develop those. Does that make sense?
But do you have good qualities and good character if your compatibility is good?
No, if saying it's the pot, then it's a matter of, you can burn the pasta in a deep pot. You know, get yourself a 5-liter pot, you know, fill it up with 4 liters of water, and put half a kilo of pasta inside. Now that's like, you know, Italian heaven, you know? You know, each individual one, you know, floating around perfectly, right? But it doesn't mean you can't burn it. Do you understand? Or burn yourself, you know, because it's, you know, 4 liters of water in a big pot, you know. You know what I'm saying? So you have all of these combined. It's not that, oh, it's all about the charts, or it's all about the, you know, character, or it's all about, you know, the communication and all that. No, you have to, it's a package. It all goes together. It's just like this. Is it all about the bangles? Just buy good bangles. Don't worry about anything else. Bangles. Why are you asking these questions?
The bracelet that you give to the woman when you marry, you give her bangles.
I think it's time for a break. Okay, we'll come back. Okay, so now you've informed yourself what bangles are.
I knew that, I just didn't know the word. I wasn't familiar with the word, English word.
I see. So how do you buy them? I'll take that one. Okay. So is that you just focus on that? That's it. You don't have to worry about anything else in the marriage life.
Might be.
You don't have to worry about the saris, the hats, the food.
You start with the bangles.
Oh, okay. So you're starting from the
good bangles.
Take the little finger and then get the whole hand. Okay.
Gold bangles.
Solid gold. Yeah. Wait, is there anything else? All other bangles are illusion. Yeah, you understand? In other words, it's all the aspects. It can't be just one aspect. So that's the whole thing, is that in this, you have to see all of them. The charts are there, then the attitudes, the character, the qualities, the ability to interact, all these different things. All that together makes it work. Does that make sense? You know. So, in this, we shouldn't use the exception to try to get rid of the rule. The exception proves the rule. You know what I'm saying? You may have a couple, they have bad charts, but the marriage works. But that's an exception, because anybody else who has a bad chart, it doesn't work. So what does that mean? If they have bad charts and it works, that means the character and training is so high that whoever they marry, they're committed to. It's like Subhadra. Whoever she would marry, she'd be a good wife. Now, one brother is trying to marry her to Duryodhana, the other brother to Arjuna. But in either case, she'll be a perfect wife. Right? So that's why in these things they may, the Kshatriyas in previous ages didn't have to use the first marriages, they could use Gandharva, Rakshasa like that, because the character was such they would make it work. But it doesn't mean that if it's not a good match, that it's not a little bit rough. Does that make sense? But in this age, even the Kshatriyas shouldn't use it. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Maharaj, I've heard you mention before that it's recommended that between the bride and groom there should be a 6 to 10 year age gap, because the girl matures faster and therefore there's a gap in maturity.
Right.
So once, after the point of maturity, when they're both beyond, you know, whatever age, doesn't that cease to become a consideration since they're both assumed to be on the equivalent level of maturity?
Not necessarily, because you have the aspect that when, it's like this, when did the girl start thinking about how she would like her house?
12. No, five. More like 3.
Yeah. Like that.
3 years.
3, 5. 12, now she's serious. Okay. At what age is the boy up to the girl's 12-year-old mentality? You know, that's serious and everything like that. Yeah. You understand? That's why the age of it. So the point is, okay, let's say that they're, you know, 40 years old. But still, she's been at this, you know, for 15, 20 years longer than he was aware of it. Because basically, the boy, only upon getting, you know, attached to the girl, starts to think about these things. Does that make sense? Yeah. So there's always going to be the difference. You know, it's just one more thing of respect, that the girl can respect the boy, that he is in some way superior to her. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the boy has to be superior to the girl, even though she spends the whole time trying to break down that superiority. But if she can, then that's not good. She becomes dissatisfied. If she can't, and he can handle that, then it's a good arrangement. Does that make sense? You know, like that. So in other words, whatever the limits are, those limits are always there. You know, and if they adjust, then there's a reason for it. Right? It's not due to weakness. Does that make sense? Because if you're dealing with something that's more powerful, it needs to be, have you know, some, to be, how do you say, accommodated. Does that make sense? So there has to be sure that it's going to accommodate. Right? So minimum 3, then better, you know, then between 3 and 10. So it just depends upon the individuals that what age works for them. Yeah, it may have a more mature boy, you may have a more mature girl, so like that. So depending on, then you have the age.
And after 10,
why
is that problematic?
There might be too much of a generational, but it can work. But it's within 10, you kind of relate better. You know, it's just like when you're 16, you relate to anybody up to, you know, 29 as basically being the same social group. They hit 30, and that's another thing. Then they're in a whole other category. And below 16, they're kids. You know, so it's you know, the ideally there should be, you know, not too much the difference there. Does that make sense? You know, so if the relationship is established nicely during youth, it goes a lot easier, because the tendency is in youth you have a little more energy and you're a little more flexible. Like that. Is that? Yeah?
I was thinking more like a 50-year-old marrying like a
25-year-old. 50 marrying a 25-year-old means there's got to be some serious, you know, how you say, character or qualities there to, you know, like that. But not as serious as if she's 25 and he's 75. And that generally requires a lot of money. No. The heart problem, that's standard. You have to have the heart problem. Then she'll marry. With money, then she'll marry. You know, who wants to stay with a 75-year-old for very long? Okay, it's like this. If I put in a couple of years advancement of time and I get back millions, then it's worth it, you know? If the guy's going to live till 120, then, you know, that's a problem. Yes.
Well, it's rich. Srila Prabhupada mentions that women are never independent.
Yes.
And we see from the scriptures they are never independent.
Yes.
But now, in a modern time, we see many ladies, they're successful, you know, young, quite young, but they're not married, and they have no desire to marry.
As long as they can work like that, then fine.
So it's not a problem.
It's not a problem, but as they get older, they might find that there's a problem. You know what I'm saying? When the drive is there, it's there. But when one gets older, then one kind of wants a little bit more of a comfortable situation. But if it can work, yeah. But that's more of the exception. It's not a standard rule. You know, somebody say, how many ladies are like that? You know, it's just like how many ladies we know of were in, you know, like the renounced order of life. I think that there's three of them, you know. And that's over the last 151 trillion years. You know, so it can happen if they have the character, but it's, you know, how many it works. Mm-hmm. Like that. So if it works, fine. But you can't use that and say, no, but here it's working for this one. Yeah, it's working for them. If it worked for you, then why are you talking about it? You just do it. You know what I'm saying? But if we're talking about that everybody has to accept that you can do that, that's dependent. If I have to be able to move in society and everybody's going to respect my social position as, you know, as I'm, you know, leading or doing this and that, then that means you're dependent. Right? Does that make sense? The man, if they accept his authority as a temple president, it just makes management work easier. But if the woman, she expects that respect and everything, that's social. That's not managerial. That's personal. You understand?
Yeah.
So the point is dependency is still there. So if you have a girl who can function, you know what I'm saying? So you'll see the symptoms. And if that's enough, great. But if it's like she doesn't need any of that at all, then that'll be more rare. You know what I'm saying? The girl's walking down the street, you know, I say, flouncing down the street. But the point is, if no one looks at her, she'll probably have a nervous breakdown. But it's because everybody on the street is looking and checking out. She goes by, they look, and like that, that's where she's getting her energies from. So she's dependent. But she's just dependent on the public instead of dependent on, you know, specific individuals. Does that make sense? So if you have a girl that she's independent and doesn't require any of that, now that will be rare. You know what I'm saying? And so the respectable girls will respect her, and the really ones out in left field will respect her. All the ones in between, they'll have a problem. Oh, she's too this. Oh, she's too that. Oh, yeah. Who does she think she is? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so the point is the Vedic can accommodate as long as you do it. It's guna and karma. It's not a matter. See, nowadays the problem is because it's rights. But, you know, what does that mean? It's guna and karma. It's not rights. It's guna and karma. You have the guna and karma, do it. If you don't have the guna and karma, then what's the whole point of talking about it and saying, you know, it's our right? What does that mean? You know, like that. It's like, it's equal rights. Anybody could go and win, you know, the Olympic clean and jerk. Right? It's open to anybody. But who can do it? Who's qualified? So it's not about rights. You know what I'm saying? It's about having the ability. If you have the ability, no one says anything. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Okay. That princess, O holy sage, will be just the type you have been thinking of in your heart.
for all these long years. She will soon be yours and will serve you to your heart's content. 28. Srila Prabhupada elaborates. The Lord awards all benedictions according to the heart's desire of a devotee. So the Lord informed Kardama Muni, quote, the girl who is coming to be married with you is a princess, the daughter of Emperor Swayambhuva, and so just suitable for your purpose. End quote. Only by God's grace can one get a nice wife just as he desires. Similarly, it is only by God's grace that a girl gets a husband suitable to her heart. Thus it is said that if we pray to the Supreme Lord in every transaction of our material existence, everything will be done nicely and just suitable to our heart's desire. In other words, in all circumstances, we must take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and depend completely on His decision, right? So that's the main principle, right? That's the main principle. Now that one's asking God for material desires, Kardama Muni himself has said that's not intelligent. But he's classified himself with a common person, so therefore I'm in that category. Right? So it's not a question that, because it's not the ideal, that it's not done. Does that make sense? You know, you have an ideal for lunch, and then there's what you actually end up with. Right? You know, so you got to eat. So the principle is you have to surrender to Krishna. Not whether it's done in a more ideal environment or less, but the point is if it's connected to the Lord, everything's perfect. In other words, if you're going to do it, connect it to the Lord. If you think it's not ideal to do, then you don't connect it to the Lord because you're not doing it. But if you're going to do it anyway, connect it to the Lord. Right? That's the principle. So that it's always connected, that's the whole point. Right? And if one does that at all stages, then Krishna makes it perfect. Man proposes, God disposes. The fulfillment of desires, therefore, should be entrusted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the nicest solution. Now, one may say, well, I'm trusting Krishna, but it's not happening. But the point is, if you didn't trust, leave it to Krishna, then it still wouldn't happen. You know what I'm saying? So you have a better shot dealing with the person who makes it happen than not dealing with the person who makes it happen. Because in any case, you know, it's going to be sanctioned by the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. In other words, the ultimate decision is not made by Beaver or the demigods. Right? So it has to be sanctioned by Krishna. Okay? Yes.
In God we trust.
In God we trust, yes. In God we trust. Kardama Muni desired only a wife, but because he was a devotee of the Lord selected a wife for him who was the emperor's daughter, a princess. Thus Kardama Muni got a wife beyond his expectation. Because if you follow the Vedic system, generally it works out that way. Like that. I remember hearing about one marriage because it was one of these traditional families and they had never seen each other. So when the boy actually took the veil off the girl's head, he was stunned for about 5 or 10 minutes. He couldn't believe that he would be marrying a girl like this. Yeah, so they had to wait. You know, or you hear about also once where the girl puts the garland, and putting the garland takes 10 minutes. There's so much emotion, so much everything, that the movement and everything, it takes 10 minutes. You know? As opposed to the other, yeah. Now, what else? What do we do? Yes.
There's also a general principle with Krishna that usually when we have the humility or the faith to leave it up to Him, then the arrangement He ends up making is always much better than what
yes,
we're thinking.
Yes, that's what is here. That's what Prabhupada says. He only desired a wife,
yes.
Right? But He ends up with the emperor's daughter. You know, so, you know, it was beyond what He expected because Krishna arranged it. Because He's turning to Krishna. That doesn't mean how you say, you go back to your room and say, you know, what's going on, Krishna? Where's the emperor's daughter? Yeah. Then Krishna will say, I gave her to Kardama. Huh? He was first on the list. Hey, you know, you have to wait around till the next.
He asked first.
Yeah, the next creation. Okay. If we depend on the choice of the Supreme Lord, we will receive benedictions and greater opulence than we desire. Because Krishna is the source of opulence. So opulence isn't the problem. Attachment is not the problem. It's that the opulence and attachment must be connected to Krishna. Right? So Kadharma wants to connect this family life to Krishna. And so then facilities work out very nice. Right? Because he's the one that's dealing here. You know, we're not seeing on the other side. It's like, here is that you're getting a son of Brahma as a husband. Right? Not bad. Right? Right? Okay. The Lord continued. She will bring forth 9 daughters from the seed sown in her by you, and through the daughters you beget, the sages will duly beget children. With your heart cleansed by properly carrying out my command, resigning to me the fruits of all your acts, you will finally attain to me. So that nice karma is then how one will give up the material and attain Krishna. So he's performing the duties, but the results are to please Krishna. Right? So in other words, nice karma means you have the desire to be involved in particular activities of karma, but the results are for Krishna. Right? When you have certain activities and certain results, that's sakam. Right? But if it's connected to Krishna, it still works. Right? But with time, it will come to that naishkarmiya platform naturally. Because you're connecting it to Krishna, you get purified. It's devotional service. So then naishkarmiya starts to become more easy. Is that something? Showing compassion to all living entities, you will attain self-realization. Giving assurance of safety to all, you will perceive your own self as well as all the universes and me and myself and you. Right? So this is the element, so we remember from Manu, these were the elements of sannyas. Right? Where you're giving assurance of safety to all and you're showing compassion to all creatures. Right? So you're careful about how you deal, that you don't disturb anybody and everything like that. Does that make sense? So that shows then he'll come to that platform. Srila Prabhupada elaborates. The simple process of self-realization for every living entity is described here. The first principle to be understood is that this world is a product of the Supreme Will. There is an identity of this world with the Supreme Lord. This identity is accepted in a misconceived way by the impersonalist. They say that the Supreme Absolute Truth, transforming himself into the universe, loses his separate existence. Thus, they accept the world and everything in it to be the Lord. That is pantheism. Right? So, their understanding is all the Lord, but his existence as separate, as Brahman, doesn't exist anymore. Does that make sense? Now, they become the material energy. So, now God is everything. So, that's different from when we say Krishna is everything. Because we mean Krishna is everything through his energies. They're saying that Brahman has transformed into what we see. So Brahman is no longer in the position of Brahman anymore. So this is illusion. Does that make sense? Well, the Brahmavadis, then they accept that Brahman is everything. Right? Brahman doesn't change. It may have variety within Brahman, but the principle of spirit never changes. You understand? So they're actually on a transcendental platform. These other ones, they're actually just an illusion. They talk. You know what I'm saying? Like that. But they're not actually. Does that make sense? Yeah. That is pantheism, wherein everything is considered to be the Lord. This is the view of the impersonalist. But those who are personal devotees of the Lord take everything to be the property of the Supreme Lord. Everything, whatever we see, is the manifestation of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, everything should be engaged in the service of the Lord. This is oneness, right? So this is the you know, when we're talking about oneness, like Ramanuja or Vishnu Swami, then they're talking about these aspects of oneness, right? So it's actually the Vaishnava understanding. so you can see the Lord in everything, or the relationship with the Lord in everything. The difference between the impersonalist and the personalist is that the impersonalist does not accept the separate existence of the Lord, but the personalist accepts the Lord. He understands that although he distributes himself in so many ways, he has a separate personal existence. Right, so the Chaturshloki, right, is that he's given, that he has expanded in everything. It is him, but he as a person is separate. That's what makes the difference. You understand? So that's how you tell ultimately if someone's impersonal or not. Does the Lord have a separate existence as a person or not? Does that make sense? This is described in Bhagavad Gita, quote, "I am spread all over the universe in my impersonal form. Everything is resting on me, but I am not present." Right? So that means it's his energies. It's all resting on him. There is a nice example regarding the sun and the sunshine. The sun, by its sunshine, is spread all over the universe, and all the planets rest on the sunshine. But all the planets are different from the sunshine. One cannot say that because the planets are resting on the sunshine, these planets are also the sun. Right? So here it's resting because the sunshine is there, therefore everything functions. There's no sunshine, there's no function. Right? So that's a standard thing. You know, I think, what is it, they give, I think, what is it, 3 days or something? The sun goes out, then it's about 3 days or something like that. But we see it's also in that pastime with Manduka Muni. Then he had the same principle. Because the wife, the husband was cursed that he'll die at sunrise, so the wife said, the sun's not rising. And then because of that, then, you know, Brahma had to come because everybody would die. You know, so it's a pretty standard. Accepted principle. Similarly, the impersonalist or pantheistic view that everything is God is not a very intelligent proposal. The real position, as explained by the Lord himself, is that although nothing can exist without him, it is not a fact that everything is him. Right? Everything's resting on him, but still he's separate as a person. So he expands as Paramatma, as Brahman, as his energies. And so everything is resting on him. Like that. So here the Lord says, here also the Lord says, you will see everything in the world to be non-different from me. This means that everything should be considered a product of the Lord's energy. And therefore everything should be employed in the service of the Lord. Right? Because as sannyasi, you don't see anything separate from the Lord. That's the actual position. It means there's the ashram and the rituals that go along with it. But the actual mentality of sannyasi is you see everything connected to the Lord. So that's a mentality of the devotee. Right, so someone who's situated nicely in devotional service, that's how they see, regardless of ashram. Does that make sense? But the idea is that by socially, at least, everybody at the end of the life should try for seeing like that. Therefore, there's the ritual of, you know, renunciation. Right? But actually, and then from the devotional viewpoint, one should see like that always. One's energy should be utilized for one's self-interest. That is the perfection of the energy. Right? So if it's connected to Krishna, then the actual interest is to connect it to Krishna. Connect yourself, connect everything else. This energy can be utilized for self-interest if one is compassionate. A person in Krishna consciousness, a devotee of the Lord, is always compassionate. He is not satisfied that only he himself is a devotee. But he tries to distribute the knowledge of devotional service to everyone. There are many devotees of the Lord who faced many risks in distributing the devotional service of the Lord to people in general. That should be done. It is also said that a person who goes to the temple of the Lord and worships with great devotion, but who does not show sympathy to people in general or show respect to other devotees, is considered to be a third-class devotee. That's just automatic. Right, because we'll see that when it comes up. Kapila Muni will describe deity worship, and then having described the whole thing, he makes this point. That if you worship him in the temple but don't respect the devotees, then actually your worship isn't of a very is not that developed.
The second class devotee is he who is merciful and compassionate to the fallen soul. The second class devotee is always cognizant of his position as the eternal servant of the Lord. He therefore makes friendships with devotees of the Lord, acts compassionately towards the general public in teaching them devotional service, and refuses to cooperate or associate with non-devotees. As long as one is not compassionate to people in general in his devotional service to the Lord, he is a third class devotee. Right? So that's the whole thing, is you're compassionate to everybody. So it's not that a particular group. Right? Because someone might say is that he refuses to cooperate and associate with non-devotees. No, but we know we want to be with everybody. But the point is those who say that generally only prefer to be with the karmis. Right? They don't actually take up association with the devotees. Does that make sense? Now, if someone is nice to the devotees, nice to karmis, nice to everybody, then that's what we're talking about. Because we're saying, no, but we have to deal like this with the karmis. But the problem is because of that element of hatred, you know, then it comes around to false ego. It's based on false ego. And that false ego means they have categories. So those people that we're trying to integrate with, they have their categories. So we're looking at it, everybody's all equal, but they don't look at it that way. They have their groups. You fit in, nice. You don't fit in, it's not about we have to fit in with them. No, it's a matter of they have their groups. You know, so it's not a matter of we try to fit in or not, you don't fit in. Does that make sense? You only fit in if they let you fit in. But then to do that, then you have to associate intimately. It means you have to take up their moods and everything like that. Does that make sense? As long as one is not compassionate to people in general in his devotional service to the Lord, he is a third-class devotee. The first-class devotee gives assurance to every living being that there is no fear of this material existence. Quote, let us live in Krishna consciousness and conquer the nescience of material existence. End quote. Right, so this assurance then, one, is that he's going to deal properly, and that dealing properly is giving Krishna consciousness. So then we can see from here is he'll be situated on the transcendental position and he'll be distributing that Krishna consciousness. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary to the same verse, the Lord says, showing mercy as a householder by giving food, clothing, and wealth to the jivas. As a sannyasi, you will then give fearlessness to the jivas by giving teachings on bhakti. Right, because you have things, right? People want things, but then they have them, then what's the next step? Right? Yeah, means you give, but you're going to be in anxiety if you can keep them. So there must be that assurance that only through devotional service, then there's stability. Because the material can't give stability. Generally, something's given by the Lord, it remains. Right? If it's by your karma, then it will remain as long as your karma is it's supposed to.
But as devotees, we see everything given by the Lord.
Yes.
That's our position.
Yes. Because it is, ultimately. Now, whether it's more because of your surrender or just because you're associating with others. Even the karmis, it's arranged by the Lord, but through the external energy.
And that's according to their previous actions.
Yes.
Strictly.
Yes.
For the devotees, it's different.
It's according to what's good for your Krishna consciousness.
So my point, according to what we just said, that whatever is given by the Lord remains, whatever is by your karma remains unless your karma runs out. So how would we know?
How would we know? What do you think it is? If you think you did it, then it's going to last a shorter time.
So it's a perception.
Everything's perception. Quoting one of the leaders of the political correctness movement, it's all perception.
Something is concrete facts, like the Lord's mercy.
No, but it's a concrete fact that it's arranged by the Lord anyway. Mm-hmm. But the point is if I think I'm the doer, then only how much you've done you get. Right? But if the attitude is right, the surrender to the Lord, then it's how much the Lord wants to give. Okay? The son, you know, shoveled the, you know, walkway. Right? And then his father gives him, you know, $5. You know, he did the work, he gets the $5. Right? But because of the relationship with the father and all that, he'll inherit everything. You know? Does that make sense? That's the whole thing. So you have two things happening at once. If you think I'm the doer, then Krishna will... It's still, he's sanctioning it, but he'll step back. And it's still not. It's still going to be what's useful or not. Does that make sense? So if, that's the whole thing, is when you surrender, then you have it. And when you want to keep it, you lose it. Yes. So if you want to keep it, you have to surrender. But if you surrender, you're not worried about keeping it. Therefore, it stays. But as soon as you think, I have it, it may go.
Yes.
Right? Because it's about the relationship that's important, not about the facility. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the thing, is that the Dharma is working on aparoksha. If you don't recognize it, it's there. As soon as you recognize it, it's not there. Does that make sense? You know, just like if you don't recognize it, you're sleeping nicely. You're aware that I'm sleeping nicely. You're not asleep. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's not exactly the way we want it to be, because the way we want it to be means we'd have to be God. And since we're not God, then it's not going to work that way. But even for him, it's about the relationship. Because he is, if anything you wanted, you could have, then after a while, it's about what you do with those things that becomes more important. Does that make sense? Yeah, you know, you go back to your place, you go out onto the veranda there, you think, wow, it would be nice if this was all a garden, and suddenly all the buildings are gone, there's just this one huge garden with this, you know, 20-foot wall around it nicely, and, you know, it's like that, and then, you know, other things you go through, and, you know, they keep you occupied for a few days, but after a while, then what about people, what about, you know, then what do you do with it? Right? Yeah, so that's the whole thing, is that for Krishna, because eternally whatever he is interested in happens, so then for him, interaction with the devotees is what he wants to happen. Right? And he doesn't control that, because it's about the interaction. So Yoga Maya controls it. So again, the element of surrender. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
But it means that Krishna is surrender to Yoga Maya.
Yes. Because she makes the arrangements. She knows what he wants, but she arranges it. Does that make sense? Like the child is surrendered to the mother, he wants to eat, and she arranges it. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so it works. So he puts himself into that dependent position. Because he is independent. We're trying to get control of everything because we think that's how we're going to enjoy. But that's not how Krishna enjoys. Right? So therefore his enjoyment's less in Vaikuntha than in Braj. Because there he is God. He is the Supreme. You know, everybody is serving because he's God. You know, so Yogamaya is still at work. Because otherwise, how does the jiva think it can interact with God? So there must be some yoga maya. But it's not as great as in Vrindavan. So, at present, you know, by the vision of scriptures, that the whole world, along with yourself, resides within me, the Supreme Lord. Then, however, you will directly realize this. Right? So, he has the vision, so Shastra Chakshus, he can see like that. But then with time, one will directly realize. So that's the whole idea. It's from knowledge, from Gyan comes Vigyan. Right? So if you take Gyan, contemplate it, practice it, it will turn into Vigyan. First you will see me in the form of the first Purusha with 1,000 heads. And you will see thousands of universes in my hair holes along with yourself. Now you know me as the Antaryami existing in yourself. Right? So he knows himself as the Paramatma, but he'll see him as the thousand-headed Vishnu, as Garbhadaksha, and ultimately as Karanadaksha. Right? So he's going up through all three stages, right? So, some yogis meditate upon the Paramatma measuring one Pradesh, who is residing in the heart within the body, and who holds the lotus, wheel, conch, club in his four hands. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.8. But then you will directly see me as the third Purusha, Kiradakshai. I will show you all things created and uncreated. The Lord concludes, O great sage, I shall manifest my own plenary portion through your wife, Devahuti, along with your 9 daughters. And I shall instruct her in the system of philosophy that deals with the ultimate principles or categories. Because right, how you actually ultimately see everything, because you're saying is the perception, is how do you perceive, how do you categorize, right? Because in the intellectual process, any information the mind gets, then first of all, when you're dealing with the intelligent, it has to be categorized. Right? Once you categorize it, then you can expand from there and see how to apply it. But the first point is you have to categorize it. Right? Yes.
We see that such technical knowledge will be presented to the Devahuti and Pradham. Is there a specific reason for that?
He's off being a Paramahamsa.
So, so he doesn't mean
it. Yeah. So it works. Because categorization is not a problem. It's just categorization connected to the Lord. Does that make sense? Yeah. Maitreya went on. Thus, having spoken to Kardama Muni, the Lord, who reveals himself only when the senses are in Krishna consciousness, departed from that lake called Bindusarova, which was encircled by the river Saraswati. While the sage stood looking on, the Lord left by the pathway leading to Vaikuntha, a path extolled by all great liberated souls. The sage stood listening as the hymns forming the basis of the Samaveda were vibrated by the flapping wings of the Lord's carrier, Garuda. So the Samaveda is just his flapping of the wings, then is the Samaveda. Okay, so once senses are in Krishna consciousness, he reveals. So when the senses are connected, then we understand Krishna. When the senses are not connected, then at that point it becomes less understanding. Right? So that's the meaning of sadhana. So sometimes there's understanding, sometimes there's not. So that's why one keeps practicing until that becomes stable. Right? So this principle, Kardama, comes to the point of being stable. So he's always seeing in that way. So then there's not a... Right? There's not an oscillation there. It's just always on the transcendental platform. Verses 35-47. The Lord fulfills his words. In 2 days, as the Lord predicted, Swayambhuva Manu arrived at the sage's hermitage with his daughter, Devahuti. Then after the departure of the Lord, the worshipful sage Kardama stayed on the bank of Bindusarova, awaiting the time of which the Lord had spoken. Swayambhuva Manu, with his wife, mounted his chariot, which is decorated with golden ornaments. Placing his daughter on it with them, he began traveling all over the earth. Right, so means the subtleties here is that, so this is husband and wife are making arrangements. It means he's going to make the things, but as we pointed out, his wife was comfortable with this. So them having situated themselves, then the daughter is put on the chariot. You see, there it's not just, okay, we're getting the daughter married, so stick her on the chariot, and then the wife is saying, hey, what about me? And, you know, so I told you we're leaving in 5 minutes. You know, and all that kind of jazz. You understand? So the husband-wife relationship is between them, and then the daughter is included. Because it's about the daughter, but it's about them making the arrangements for the daughter. You understand? So there's all kinds of subtleties. It's not about the efficiency of getting it done. It's about all the considerations. So in getting it done, then the considerations of the wife, consideration of the daughter is there by Swayambhuva. Otherwise, if he wanted to be practical, he'd just go himself. Yeah, make a phone call. Yo, Dhamma. He began traveling all over the earth. Ovidura, they reached the hermitage of the sage, who had just completed his vows of austerity on the very day foretold by the Lord. Right, because he was doing some particular austerities. The Lord came during these austerities, being pleased, gave him the benediction, but still it's when his austerities finished, that's when these results came. Right? Otherwise, there'd be the thing, he didn't finish his vow. Right? So he finished his vow and then... The holy lake Bindusarova, flooded by the waters of the river Saraswati, was resorted to by hosts of eminent sages. Its holy water was not only auspicious, but as sweet as nectar. It was called Bindusarova because drops of tears had fallen there from the eyes of the Lord, who was overwhelmed by extreme compassion for the sage who had sought his protection. So it appears at this point that's where it got named Bindusarova. Like as we see before, it was that he very affectionately was looking at the sage. 30. Oh. Okay, I guess we stop here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki,
Sarva
Bhakti Vrinda ki,
Jainita
Gaur Thing.